Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Columbus Blue Jackets knocked its fans and foes for a loop this season, now headed to the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs. Beginning tonight in Pittsburgh, the Jackets have shattered previous team records across the board, and they came within a game of hitting the NHL record for consecutive wins, evidence enough that a lot can change in a year. Coming up later in the program, we're going to hear from a hockey historian and learn more about the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Joining us now is Columbus Dispatch sports reporter Aaron Portsline. Welcome back, Aaron.
Well, thank you, man. It's good to be back.
And by phone, in the car, Blue Jackets broadcaster and Fox Sports Ohio analyst Bill Davich. Welcome back, Bill.
Hi, Ann. How you doing?
I'm good. When you start to think that this might be, or when did you start to think that this might be a special season for the Jackets?
Well, I think when they hired John Tortorella, you know, a little over a year and a half or so ago, that he came in with an idea and what he wanted to do. And when you follow his track record and what he was able to do in Tampa when they won the Stanley Cup back in 2004, a lot of those theories, philosophies, coaching tactics, the ability to change the culture in a room, you could see he had a mission. He had something in mind, and he was able to do it. I was excited to see and being able to watch players become better under his tutelage. And I think that was a real good start when he came in over a year ago to be able to make this happen.
But he changed, too. It wasn't the same Tortorella, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I remember Aaron and I talking about what the possibility would be if they hired John Tortorella. And I didn't know John personally, but I had a chance to take a look at his book of work and what he'd been able to accomplish. And you know, he impressed me because it's what he is doing is not anything new. It's actually very old school and making guys accountable and basically pushing the mental button through physicality. And that means to be able to work your body, to be able to push beyond and make something happen as training camp and the summer workouts and all that were all put into place. You could see a change in the players. You could see the change in their mindset. And he instilled into them what they wanted to be, and that was to be a better hockey player and a better team.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you're a Blue Jackets hockey fan and are stuck watching it on television like I am, you're very familiar with the voice on the phone. Bill Davich, Blue Jackets broadcaster and Fox Sports Ohio analyst. Also with us, Aaron Portsline, sports reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, what about you? What was that turning point or what was that moment when you thought this might be a different kind of a season?
Yeah, I think for me it was 10-0 over Montreal. Just to see, you know, but Bill, hey, that was just,
yeah.
It's they've been on the other side of similar scores. Yeah. This was an unbeaten team, Montreal, when they came to Nationwide, and Columbus had been playing well, but to see the waves of confidence and them as an original six team, the Yankees of hockey, really, and to have the Blue Jackets just dominate them, rub their noses in it physically. I mean, all elements of the game, skill, goal, the whole thing. That was sort of like, this is a different animal. And I thought they'd be good this year. I thought they'd be better this year. But typically you see incremental steps. You don't go from fourth worst to fourth best in the league in one year. So I expected a little bit, but that was sort of a, you know, you better not plan on having the garden in April. You better tell the family that the vacation might have to wait a little bit longer in the summer this year. This could be a little bit different.
I think for me, it was when I started noticing that all kinds of people were scoring, all kinds of people were assisting. You know, obviously Bobrovsky, you know, the goaltender was doing a fabulous job right off the bat.
Sure.
But everyone seemed to be involved. Bill Davich?
Yeah. And that's what you've got to have. And for the first time in, you know, the 18 years that I've been with this organization and the idea of being able to build a team, you have to do it through depth and do it through the organization and how important your American League team is. And when you had a chance to watch what they did last year and you were going to have, you know, four or five or six of these guys be able to come in and dot the lineup, it added depth and it added a culture of winning. And that's something that this team had not had before. And so that was exciting. And then, as you said, the scoring was spread out with the exception of, you know, Cam Atkinson.
Of course, yes.
Goals. You know, it had been spread out, but you got four lines. And I just love, as a coach, you want to look down the bench and you have the trust for everybody. And I just really think that trust factor took off for the four forward lines. But, you know, we talked about Bob, but the young defensemen and what they did in Zach Werenski and Seth Jones, they made Jack Johnson and David Savard better defensively, better players. And so they had depth all the way around, which was a good key.
And to Bill's point earlier, this really started middle of last season, maybe even before the middle point of last season. I have never heard a coach at the midpoint of a season talking about next year's training camp, which John Tortorella unabashedly talked about training camp.
They need more work.
Yeah, they need more work. There needs to be a higher standard here, a higher level here. So you're in January and you're talking about September's training camp and there's still 30 games left in the season. He put the fear of God in a lot of those players. And he's one of the few coaches that has that presence and swagger that, I mean, the modern athlete's a little bit different, but when John Tortorella says something, he's got the young guys scared a little bit. He's got the veteran players' attention because there's a track record and they know he means it, his reputation. It started then. They changed, a lot of their bodies changed over the summer. Now, they weren't certainly not out of shape by street standards, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
But we had professional athletes lose 7 pounds, 9 pounds, 10 pounds. That's a lot of weight. The goaltender lost 17 pounds, Sergei Bobrovsky.
Right.
He was not out of shape. He was in fantastic shape, but he had become muscle bound. So he went from sort of a fire hydrant to a jockey, if you will. He's slender and lean and all bendy now, flexible, like he'd sort of lost a little bit. That sort of confidence. The confidence that comes from believing you are physically superior is something that John Tortorella desperately wanted to institute here and started planting the seeds of it well into last season.
Lots of season bests, most wins, most points, consecutive wins, most wins by a goalie, blah, blah, most goals scored and more. I mean, it's amazing. What do you think is the most telling stat when it comes to the team's success this season, Bill Davidge?
I think the goals against average. You know, the ability to score. And especially right now, you know, it's not how many goals you're going to score, it's how many you're going to give up. And I really think with Sergei Bobrovsky in the year that he had, which I still think today he'll the Vezina Trophy is his, I really think it starts there. And again, if you look at the defensive core of the Columbus Blue Jackets, they have played so much better. They're more accountable, especially after 40. We sat and watched practice yesterday. The accountability through the neutral zone.
They're gonna
stymie Pittsburgh. That's their goal. This has been well thought out. They know what they need to do. But I just think their goals against average, to see where they were, where they had a chance to come from, has been pretty impressive. And right now, with playoff hockey, that's where it's going to count.
Yeah. How does Aaron Portsline? How does playoff hockey differ from regular season?
Well, it differs in the regular season. You play a team and then you move on to another team. So you can plant seeds from one game to the next time you meet that team 6 weeks later, sometimes 3 months later. A series is more, there's more chess to the series. So you can lay the groundwork.
More strategy.
Absolutely. You can lay the groundwork in game one. Win or lose, this is how we're going to play this guy. Individual matchups become bigger issues. Like the Blue Jackets are going to want Dubinsky against Sidney Crosby whenever they have that opportunity, because there's a history there, and Dubinsky's, he's one of the few players in the NHL who is comfortable checking Sidney Crosby,
right.
Likes the challenge. And just not to get too tedious here, but the home team gets to put their players on the ice second. So the Blue Jackets tonight in Pittsburgh will have to put their team out first, and then Pittsburgh will see, okay, these are the guys that are on the ice, here's who we're putting out. Right,
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
They can change it that they don't have to submit the roster.
Well, I'm talking like during the game. So
gotcha.
When there's a stoppage,
oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And they
okay.
make a line change, the Penguins will put their the Blue Jackets have to put their guys out first. This is in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
And then Pittsburgh says, "Okay, Dubinsky's out there, so we're going to put this guy out there."
Okay.
And then in Columbus, it works the other way. Obviously, the home team gets the second line change. So you start to see the added importance of that, where now this is the third game Dubinsky's played Crosby. That line's working or it's not working. These are the sort of matchups that they're looking for. Bad blood tends to occur more when teams are playing repeatedly,
yeah.
Which is why playoff hockey is so great. And it just becomes, there's mental games. I mean, Tortorella, he thrives Bill, I think I'm accurate in saying this, thrives on the mental games, loves to poke people and play people and see what kind of a response he can get out of people. And now that's going to be not just his own team, that will be down the hallway to the opponent as well. And you'll see all of those things play out.
And it's already started.
How so? Yeah.
Well, just he and Mike Sullivan, again, they're best of friends. They work together.
Coach, yeah.
Three other. Yeah, and so when you, you're coaching against a guy, you know exactly what he wants to do, how he wants to do it after hearing a guy, you know, in a coach's room for the span of 11 or 12 years, whatever it was, they have an idea on what they're trying to do. And towards just these, I like it right now because he's really being passive, and that's not like Torts. I think after we get a game under our belt, I think you'll see things open up a little bit more, and it's going to be a lot of fun because there's so many emotional connections to this. You know, going back our 4 years ago, it's going to be fun to watch, but it starts with the coaches.
You mentioned, I just want to spend just a sec on the whole Sidney Crosby thing. Why is he so precious? Why is someone like Dubinsky, you know, one of the few that will check him?
Well, from my standpoint, I think that, you know, when he's the best in the world,
you know,
he just won his second Rocket Richard trophy, and he is the best in the world.
Yeah.
And he's a guy, too, that competes, and he's not afraid to push back. And so you have a guy like Dubinsky that, if you were to take a look at the ladder, he's a realm below Sidney Crosby when you look at skill-wise. I mean, there's no question about it, so... For Brandon Dubinsky to be able to come in, game in, and game out,
okay,
and to be able to have one thing in mind, and that is the stone and to stop Sidney Crosby from scoring and to basically put a burr underneath his saddle, that's something that's pretty special. From a coach's standpoint, you'd love to be able to have that. And I go back, you know, Porter, you talked about the 10-0 loss or the 10-0 win against Montreal. That 7-1 win a few days before when we beat Pittsburgh, and Crosby scored the first goal to make it 1-0. I knew at that time, too, this is going to be a special team because they responded, they came back, and they were in the face of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I think that laid a foundation for where this team wants to go and what they need to do in the first game tonight.
You know, Bill Davidge, we got to let you go in just a second. But first, before we do, I want to ask you about the fans, the fifth line. Tell people who maybe kind of hear about that on the sidelines and maybe are watching the playoffs for the first time who aren't really familiar with Blue Jackets fans, is it really a thing?
Is it really a thing?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question. Again, I was part of two other organizations, you know, over the course of my tenure, one of the Detroit Red Wings and one of the Florida Panthers, and I never had a chance to watch communities and people get involved like the fifth line has been able to do in Columbus. You know, you have the jacket backers on one side. You have the fifth line that basically encompasses, you know, the entire atmosphere in Nationwide Arena. And I spoke last night at an outing over at Scioto, just talking hockey. And there's about six people came up to me that were, he says, we're part of the fifth line. And that's what you want to hear. It isn't just within the confines of Nationwide Arena. This is a community support event that they all come together to be able to make sure that the Blue Jackets are doing a great job and they're going to have support as it goes. But when you walk into Nationwide Arena, you're going to know who the fifth line are, what they do, what they stand for, because you're going to hear them, you're going to see them, and they're a big part of where this Jacket team can go.
What do you compare it to, Aaron Portsline?
Well, I think other teams certainly have fan bases. I don't know that there's one that's popped up that leaps to mind to me as organically as this one has. When you think about a franchise that has, not to pick on them, but it's been a long 15, 16 seasons to get to this point. They have tested their fan base, and I think it's so different because people who have followed this team from day one apply all of those struggles to now still, whereas the players in the room and the management of the team are like, well, we didn't lose all those games. I mean, it's changed a little bit since we've been here. They've had the best four-season run. I mean, it's not even close in franchise history. But those fans, they rose up during a time of just abject despair, right? Or coming out of it, where there's a sense of hopelessness. But the people here never lost – A, their love of the game, but B, their love of the organization. They were just waiting for the organization to love them back, right? And so, for me, that's what I love about it. It wasn't easy to be a fifth-line member when it started. It wasn't easy to remain a fifth-line member, but they've remained fifth-line members. You know what I'm saying? And so that they deserve that. I get kind of goosebumps a little bit when I think about the long nights, the hopeless seasons, the seasons that are over by Thanksgiving, and now to see those people be rewarded, or maybe, you know, be rewarded beyond their expectations this season, it's due.
Yeah.
It's due.
Bill Davidge, I have to say goodbye to you. Thanks so much. Drive carefully and have a blast tonight.
Will do. Brian Gieseslaw says to say hello to both of you.
Thank you. Hi to you,
thanks.
Brian.
See you there.
Bye-bye. See you tonight on TV. More Stanley Cup playoffs, more Stanley Cup playoff history, and more Blue Jackets coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. This season, the Columbus Blue Jackets played 82 games over the course of 179 days with more dazzle than disappointment, to say the least, and for a change. The dazzle propelled them to clinch a berth in the 2017 Stanley Cup playoffs by mid-March. The disappointment was only spotty until the tail end of the season, when a six-game losing streak had fans fretting about playoff performance. We'll know better tonight when they kick off their third playoff bid in 17 years, or is it 18 years? I can't keep track. This time against defending champions Pittsburgh Penguins at Pittsburgh. We're talking Blue Jackets hockey and hockey history this hour. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch sports reporter Aaron Portsline. Aaron, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to be here.
Joining us now by phone from Toronto is hockey historian and author of numerous books on hockey, including in 2012 with Stanley Cup, 120 Years of Hockey Supremacy, Eric Zweig. Welcome back, Eric.
Thanks very much.
Okay, so you know a thing or two about hockey history. How do the Jackets stack up this year, Eric Zweig?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, not because they didn't have a great year, just because it's a tough grind. The Stanley Cup playoffs, people say, and it's hard to argue, it's the toughest playoff challenge in any sports league. That being said, you know, going up against Pittsburgh, who they have a lot of familiarity against, they are the defending Stanley Cup champions, but it's not uncommon. Just 2 years ago, Chicago won the Stanley Cup and then were knocked off in the first round the next year. That would be last year. So, you know, anything can happen.
But the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline, didn't give them very good odds today, did they?
You know, that was one guy who said game seven, right? I mean, you know, it's tough to pick these, to make these predictions. You're either a homer or a hater, right? It's one way or the other. Nobody's won the Stanley Cup in consecutive seasons since 1998. Is that correct, Eric? Is that
yeah,
right?
that's another thing I was thinking, too. Yeah, it's
yeah.
Been almost 20 years.
So think about that, right?
But it's not about winning the cup at this point. It's about trying to get through this first.
Well, for sure. But Pittsburgh won it last year.
Right.
So history tells us it's unlikely they win it again this year,
right.
Although if they're good enough, history doesn't necessarily dictate that. Can they get through the first round? They can.
Yeah.
I mean, they are prohibitive underdogs. Let's not kid ourselves. This is the Stanley Cup. These are the champs, Pittsburgh. This is a team that's never won a first-round series, even a first-round series. It's only the third time they've been in the playoffs. I think they are much better positioned to play against an elite team than they were when they were in the playoffs back in 14. Is it good enough? We'll find out. I there is a competitive spirit in this room that I've not seen. There's a depth of talent in this room that Columbus has never seen. It's a 108-point team. I think Columbus maybe is even harder on itself because of the struggles that have been here. People are not quite sure if it's safe to believe or safe to turn yourself over emotionally to this team. But I do think it's a different vibe in that room. They believe that they're peers with Pittsburgh rather than the little brother, big brother scenario of a few years ago.
Okay, not to pick nits, but what does the history tell us about defending champs getting through the first round, Eric Zweig?
Well, you know, In the old days, it's funny. It's true that it's been 20 years since anybody's won in back-to-back seasons. But, you know, dynasties sort of ruled hockey for decades. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, there were six teams in the NHL for an awfully long time that made it easier to get back and to repeat. But, you know, it's there's no pattern. Champions are just as likely to go back to the final and lose, as has happened a couple of times with Detroit in recent years, as they are to go out in the first round. You can't look at that. But, you know, it's funny. You mentioned, you know, I'm on the phone from Toronto where we are insanely crazy here because the Leafs are back in the playoffs. And do they have a shot against Washington? In theory, they probably don't. But everybody knows, you know, the number seven can, or the number eight can knock off the number one. It happens in hockey more than it does in other sports. You guys, Pittsburgh and Columbus, it's so tight. There's really little to choose between them except Columbus has no history of this and Pittsburgh does. So, you know, obviously that's going to make people nervous. But, I mean, you know, if I had to put money on it, I'm sorry to say I would go with the Penguins, but I wouldn't want to put money on it because, you know, it's tight. It's razor sharp. Anything can happen.
What, Aaron Portsline, what is the, there are some guys on the team that have been to the playoffs before, or have been on winning teams,
sure.
Or, you know, have more experience, I guess is the best way to put it. What do they tell their teammates? I mean, are they telling them stuff about how to approach playoff game play?
Yeah, well, I talked to Scott Hartnell yesterday, and he's been in a lot of these series. He's played right. Pittsburgh. I think this will be the fourth time he's played against Pittsburgh in the postseason. And he is a hated figure in Pittsburgh, so he's got a huge grin on his face all day yesterday.
This is a good thing.
Yeah, he's delighted. I asked him, like, you know, what do you say? They've got six players who will be in the lineup tonight who've never played in the playoffs before.
Yeah.
And Hartnell said, you don't tell them anything because there's nothing you can tell them. You don't tell them anything to calm them down. You just say, have fun. It's going to be crazy out there for 10 minutes or so. And then it's going to settle down. It's going to feel like a game. But the pace is going to be a little bit faster. The hits are going to be a little bit harder. It's going to be the most fun you've ever had. So just put your arms around it.
That's the same sort of stuff they're saying here. I mean, Toronto is loaded with rookies this year. But we have a very experienced coach who's been sort of warning the intensity really ratchets up in the playoffs. But, you know, Austin Matthews was quoted in the papers this morning saying, no, it's just hockey. You've been playing hockey your whole life. It's fun. It's the same game. So, you know, it's the same sort of thing for Columbus. They don't have the experience. But once you get past those initial jitters, it's hockey. It's the same hockey. It's a little tougher and intense, more intense. But most of these guys have been in the playoffs somewhere before, if not in the NHL. So, you know, you get past that and the better team wins.
I don't know where I read it anymore, but that someone, it was recently that someone said, this is what you play the regular season for, is the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, John Tortorella has been saying for weeks now, when we get into the real games, we have four games left here. When the real games start,
right.
And the way a Tortorella coach team usually works is the coach says things for a while. And then about 5 or 6 days later, you start to hear the same phrase.
Finding ways to win.
In the
room.
Right.
Yeah.
And he has a very distinct vocabulary. But now players in the room are saying, you know, when the real games start, there is the sense. And it's a new frontier here in Columbus because the expectation has been maybe they'll make the playoffs this year. Not, well, they're going to make the playoffs. Maybe they'll do this, right?
Yeah.
And I think that when they won 16 games in a row earlier this season, that sort of changed the outlook here where no longer was it just like, maybe they'll make the playoffs. It's like, they better win a first round, or they're just the same team they've always been, right? But they're trying to raise that expectation, the standard here, so that the playoffs are looked at as the real games, not the pleasant end of a really good season, but the beginning. And to further it, and Tortorella has said a couple times the last couple of days, I want our guys to think of this now as a 60-day season. We have 60 days left in this season. In other words, all the way.
Yeah.
That's how he wants them to view it. Not just, woo, we made it, look around, take some pictures, go home. No, this is the start of where you want to be. They want this to be an annual right of spring in Columbus, not just an every 5 year celebration.
Hey, Eric Zweig, why is the playoff season so long for hockey? A lot of newbies to the sport, people who don't really understand why it is the way it is. What's going on?
Well, it's funny, you know, in the history of American sports and taking on a Canadian sport, Americans have always thought, though it's interesting, basketball players are just as long now, thought traditionally, these playoffs are crazy, it's insane. Like in the history of sports, you know, the World Series for years and years and years was, you know, the best team in each league went to play in this championship series, and that's how it should be. I think hockey discovered very early that, hey, you know, there's money to be made in the playoffs. And there was a sense that when they first started, it's like, you know, seasons were a lot shorter then, and it was sort of unfair. You know, why should just the first place team make it if, you know, they were slumping by the end of the year and another team came on strong and they're really probably the better team, but they don't get to make it because only one team does. So hockey was really the first sport to create playoffs for, you know, playoff sake rather than just breaking a tie or in a made-up championship. So there's always been a long history of long playoffs in hockey, or at least playoffs. They've gotten longer as, you know, the seasons have gotten longer and more teams have been brought in. But, I mean, really, it's funny that, I mean, everybody thinks this is the real season, you know? It's like 82 games of exhibition to get to what you really want to get to. And you sort of have to think of it. I mean, I hadn't heard that Tortorella quote, but it makes sense. I mean, if you go into it thinking, woohoo, we're just happy to be here, you're probably not going to go very far. You have to have that kind of long game mentality. It doesn't mean it's going to work, but I think if you go in thinking, well, you know, four fun playoff games at least, you're going to be in trouble. I mean, the owners get to count their extra revenue, but the players and the fans don't get to. So, you know, you got to take the long view.
Do you think that's part of Tortorella's strategy back in January 2016, Aaron Portsline, when he said that training camp was going to be different this year?
Yeah, I think there's a few Tortorella strategies in there. That was about being the most, in his words, the most physically fit team in the league. Having that as your base of confidence that we are in, as a team, we're in better shape than our opponent tonight. And build off of that. That's the first step towards confidence. He's also done something really unique this season that I think a lot of NHL coaches have talked about. I've had them express it to me that they don't like morning skates either, but nobody's had the guts to do less than the other team. Everybody wants to be doing more to show that they care more, that they're more prepared. Tortorella's stopped doing morning skates this year.
Yeah.
And a morning skate is on a game day. Teams would typically come in 10:30 at home, 11:30 on the road, put their gear on, skate for 20 minutes, have a meeting afterward, gear off, shower, go back to the hotel. And I know a lot of people who have years have thought that was a total waste of energy. Tortorella's the first guy to say, we're not doing them. We're not coming in, put the gear on, taking a 20-minute twirl. We're not doing all of this stuff. We know it's worthless. They were first put in place because owners and coaches wanted to know who'd been out drinking the night before. Honestly, who could make the rink? Who looks like they're actually together and sharp here? That's not a concern these days. These guys are in such great shape, and
they're disciplined.
Yeah, they do like the odd beer, but they do not go out the night before games. It's much more serious now. Sometimes to the league's detriment, many will tell you. It's taken as much more serious now than it used to be. But so they've stopped doing that. And part of the reason was he wants energy to be preserved for the games. He wants them to feel fresher at the end of the season than they normally would from just doing the daily grind in and out. So they spend a lot of time in the hotel. They spend a lot of time away from the rink. The only time they're at the rink is when they're working on something, skating, practicing, doing drills that they need to do to refine their game. They're not doing it just as a matter of course.
Mm. Eric Zweig, when did the Stanley Cup playoffs get to be a real thing? Now, we know they've been around, 128 years?
125
years.
Okay. 124. But,
oh, that's 125. Yeah, I know you wrote your 120 year thing in 2012.
Five years ago.
I can't do basic math apparently. Yeah, 125. When did it? It hasn't always been what it is today. So what was the tipping point?
Well, I mean, in terms of like significance, it was pretty early. I mean, in the first few years, in the early 1890s, it was still very much kind of confined to Montreal. But as early as 1896, there was a challenge. In the old days, there weren't leagues, a big league like there was now. There were lots of small leagues across the country, and the champion of any league was eligible. Well, any, you know, that's a little but of a generalization. But basically, the champion of any league could challenge the current Stanley Cup champion. And in 1896, a challenge came from Winnipeg, which, because it was, I guess, a greater distance, it just made a lot of news. It became a real national item in Canada, like where suddenly hockey had been just very regional and the Stanley Cup hadn't made much of a dent. Now this team from Winnipeg comes to Montreal and wins and takes the cup back, and then particularly later when Montreal challenged for the rematch, that really sort of started people in Canada paying attention. Like, this is a national trophy that, you know, we could win. But it's, you know, in those days, seasons were, you know, 4 to 10 games long, and the playoffs were a 1-2 best-of-3 challenge. So that's, you know, considerably different than what it is now. But very soon there were professional leagues, and then the leagues started challenging each other. And then, as I said, the playoffs just sort of started to grow, and it did grow as a moneymaker. But in Canada, the Stanley Cup has been a big thing for a very long time. But in terms of, you know, 16 teams fighting it out, that's been, you know, in recent NHL years as the league got bigger and bigger and the playoffs expanded. So, I mean, that's not the best answer, but that's an answer.
In what I read a funny story about the Cup. Must not have been as big as it is now, but they were. It was back in 1924, and they were changing some tire. I don't know. Some players had the Cup, and they changed a tire on their car, and they forgot that the Cup was laying on the side of the road, and they took off. It was in the snow.
Yeah, that is supposedly true. I don't know about the snow, because it was already April, though it was Montreal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Montreal can get pretty long winters.
Yeah, it's probably snowing.
There are a lot of those old stories of the Stanley Cup that probably aren't true.
Yeah.
But that one is. Yeah, the Cup was a lot smaller. In those days, it wasn't much bigger than the bowl and the sort of kind of neck pieces underneath the immediate bowl, if you can visualize the trophy in your mind. And, yeah, they were going home from a banquet in Montreal to celebrate the fact that they had won. And I think it's possible they had just been presented with the Cup because it hadn't come with them when they'd won the championship series. So they had just received it. They were going back home to celebrate a sort of more intimate party at the home of the owner. And apparently the car got a flat tire, and they got out to change the tire. And, you know, why they didn't just leave the Cup in the back seat, who knows.
Yeah.
But it's apparently a true story. I mean, it's certainly told often enough, and there's enough truth around it that it probably did happen.
Now it's this coveted icon, Aaron Portsline. It's a big deal when it comes to the Jackets, or when it comes to Nationwide Arena,
right,
and that kind of a thing. I read a funny story about how it's really also really gross because but all kinds of gross things have been done.
Oh,
to it.
Even just the stories we know about are disturbing enough. Can you imagine the germs on
what
that?
You don't know.
Yes,
but fans really love it too.
Well, it is. I think of all of the sports. I think you can a lot if you're an ardent sports fan. You can visualize the World Series trophy. Certainly the Super Bowl. These things. I think the Stanley Cup. Even for people that aren't huge hockey fans, there's an instant image of what that trophy looks like. There's that iconic picture that happens every year with the captain of the team lifting it over his head. And isn't it cool that in hockey, and this is part of it too, that the trophy is handed to the players first?
Yes.
Not the owner. Nothing against the suits upstairs. It's given to the people that have blood, sweat, and tears their ways to that trophy.
Ergo the germ type situation.
They lift it over their heads. And every player that wins the Stanley Cup, of course, gets a day with it in the summertime. Every prominent staff member gets a day with the cup to take it to their hometown, take it to any special place, put their baby in it and take a picture of their baby. You've seen that picture a bunch of times. All sorts of things have been drunk from the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
All sorts of people have been drunk around the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's been everywhere. And there's actually a full-time staffer who travels the world with the Stanley Cup.
I was going to say, since 1924, hopefully they've
it's a different
upped their game a little
but
bit.
Yeah.
It's a different guy, but it's someone.
But it is interesting that, like, of all the trophies, like, if the Stanley Cup shows up in an event And, you know, without a player, without a team, without anything other than if you put the trophy down in a parking lot in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
people would flock to it.
Yeah.
In a way that, I mean, the Super Bowl trophy is a cool-looking trophy, but, you know, I don't know that people... Also, the fact that there's, I mean, though they do have some replica trophies that they use for events and promotions, there is one Stanley Cup. You know, there's not, like, they don't make a new one. Like, the World Series trophy, they make a new one every
year. Right, exactly,
Lombardi
exactly.
Trophy.
There's history on this thing.
The Lombardi Trophy, you know, you go to Pittsburgh and they're going to have seven of them in the lobby of the Steelers' office. But there's one Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly adds to the mystique.
We will continue our conversation about the playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Columbus Blue Jackets get started tonight in Pittsburgh against the defending champion Penguins. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Columbus Blue Jackets kick off their third Stanley Cup playoff season tonight in Pittsburgh against the defending champion Penguins. We're talking Blue Jacket and Stanley Cup history and rules with Columbus Dispatch sports reporter Aaron Portsline. Also by phone, hockey historian and author of numerous books on hockey, including Stanley Cup, 120 Years of Hockey Supremacy, Eric Zweig. And then he wrote that book back in 2012. Don't get confused, as I easily am. We have an email from Brad. I have a few emails. And by the way, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can always tell when I want to hog the conversation. I forget to give out the number. How convenient for me. Email from Brad. He says, I am a huge fan of the Blue Jackets, and we've had season tickets for the last 4 years until this year. We bailed this season because last year had so much promise, but then this happens, and it's great, but they appear to be flat heading into this playoff with six losses in the last seven games. I hope I'm wrong. Aaron Portsline, what do those six games mean?
Well, I think the players and coaches will tell you conveniently that they don't mean anything. I'll reserve judgment. I think there's a couple of things that if you look at this team and the roster and the way that they're put together, you say, you know, the power play hasn't been good for a while now, quite a while. They dried up offensively. Sometimes that gets into your head, and that can be a harder thing to fix than structural deficiencies defensively, because that there's more to it. Everybody's sort of affected in a different way. There were signs in Toronto the last game that they sort of played the way that they wanted to play. I do agree with John Tortorella, the coach. They clinched remarkably with 11 games left in the season. Like, they clinched a playoff spot. This is a team that in its previous two playoff spots clinched in game 80. So it was game 80, you got two games, and now, boom, it's playoffs. So they had almost a month between knowing they were in the playoffs and playing. This is a team, I would say, they are as energy-based as any team in the league, where they have to play at an incredibly high rate. And once they clinch, there's even if it's just a small kernel of we have reached where we want it to be, you step back even a half step and it's not the team that it was.
It's the adrenaline thing you're talking
Absolutely.
About. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so they showed some signs of coming around in Toronto. It's not a switch that you can just flip. Fine. But I don't think energy is going to be an issue in any way in the first round. But the scoring touch is a concern. I think there's a lot of guys they've got to get going. I wonder if everything is right with Wennberg, because Wennberg hasn't been particularly impactful here lately. There's a number of guys who've cooled off that need to get going, and sometimes the playoffs is not the place to fix that.
Eric Zweig, any sense historically about the earlier you clinch that berth, the impact that has on the rest of the season and going into the playoffs?
Well, it's an odd thing in hockey that the races, maybe it happens in other sports too, but the races seem to become so focused on the bottom couple of teams, like who were the last couple of teams to get in there. And, you know, for us in Toronto this year, that was pretty exciting because we were one of them. But there's less attention paid to sort of the jockeying at the top and who's staying sharp down the stretch. And it's true, it's hard to turn it off and turn it on. And yeah, I'm sure there's a bit of a tendency to relax once you know you've clinched, and these last seven games don't really mean anything. Though that last game when you guys ended your streak and beat us, that was a big game for us, and in Toronto, us, I shouldn't say us. That was a big game in Toronto that we really needed to win more than Columbus needed to win, and Columbus beat the Leafs. So I think that's probably a good sign that they're sharp. But it's really going to come down to, is Bobrovsky, can he keep this going? I mean, goaltending in hockey has always been a key. It's even a bigger key in the playoffs than at any other point in the year. You know, Matt Murray came out of nowhere for Pittsburgh last year and became a hero in the Stanley Cup. So on the one hand, you know, he's proved he can do it, but that doesn't necessarily mean he can do it again. I mean, that's going to be the key. I mean, you have to score the goals, and they are going to have to get their offense cranked up a little bit. But Pittsburgh's got a few key guys hurt. I mean, Malkin supposedly coming back. But Letang, who was a big part of their Stanley Cup run last year, their top defenseman, Chris Letang, he's out. That's going to hurt them, though they've been playing without him for a little while now. But goaltending in hockey and in the playoffs in particular is potentially the key. And your guy's a potential Vezina Trophy winner and maybe even a Hart Trophy nominee. So yeah. That could make the difference.
And to your point, Eric, Bobrovsky has carried this team for long stretches this season. He's probably going to win his second Vezina Trophy given to the league's top goaltender. You'd have to think he's certainly at the top of that list. The one line that's not on his resume, though, is playoffs. He's not been a good playoff goalie. He's 2-6, .908 save percentage. This is his fourth crack at it. Third as the starter. Needs to have that line there, or I think this is the point where it moves from being a small sample size to now a trend with Bobrovsky. I think this is a big playoffs for him where he has to start.
Well, it's interesting. I remember that we talked about this a little bit 3 years ago. That it's funny that Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, has a Stanley Cup on his resume, but was sort of, and that seemed to be everybody thought, well, now he will get over it. Now he will be the elite goalie we've always expected him to be. Mm-hmm. And he's always been sort of spotty. And that last year, Matt Murray came from nowhere and sort of stole the crown. But it's true. I mean, he hasn't done it before. I always wonder how much, you know, he hasn't done it before means he can't do it versus, you know, once you finally do it, all right, well, now he's done it.
Sure.
But it's true. He has to do it. I mean, it's going to be on him if he's stumbling in the playoffs, and they can't win unless he is the best player on the team, I think.
Agreed.
Email from Dave. Will the young Columbus Blue Jacket skaters man up to the Penguins? Is the physical part of the game, the mano-a-mano part, going to be most important, or is it the skill part? We talked about that a little bit before Aaron Portsline, the importance that Dubinsky's not afraid to go up against the Sidney Crosby, that kind of a thing, not afraid to check him.
Yeah, that physical aspect has to be there for Columbus. Even the Blue Jackets readily admit this. They don't have the firepower up front that Pittsburgh does. It's really not close. When they're playing their best, Sidney Crosby is the best player in the world, and Evgeny Malkin is top five in terms of just the unstoppable, highly skilled forwards. I look at the sheet of ice this way, from the red line back, and to Eric's point, Chris Letang, the Penguins' best defenseman, is out. Columbus has the chance to be the better team red line back than Pittsburgh does. And yes, I'm allowing that Bobrovsky's had the struggles and Murray has won a Stanley Cup. They have the potential red line back to be the better club, Columbus. They have to mitigate the imbalance that Pittsburgh has red line forward. Just those two players alone, and you forget about Phil Kessel, who is a big-time goal scorer in this league. They have waves of high-end talent, Pittsburgh does. They can create scoring chances and goals out of nothing, whereas Columbus is this workmanlike team. Their forwards have to forecheck and come in waves and create turnovers and score some ugly goals to get by. So if that's how you're built, you have to be the more physical team. It doesn't mean taking runs at players. It doesn't mean certainly they cannot go to the penalty box. They cannot play dirty, because if they go to the penalty box, Pittsburgh is the best power play in the league, or third best, number one offense.
And the Jackets haven't been doing so great on that score. So,
yeah. Their penalty kill's okay.
Well, yeah, true.
But you cannot tempt fate like that against Pittsburgh. So they have to be smart about it.
Was that in today's paper or when that you got to temper that pushing harder, more physical game without the penalties?
Correct. And that's the line that they have to find. And it's a difficult spot. What are the officials going to allow? What are they not going to allow? Where's the line in this series? They have to toe that line. They've got to be right up on it and toe it. And if Pittsburgh gets frustrated by Columbus's physical play without Columbus doing themselves in by putting Pittsburgh right in the box, then that's a really good sign for Columbus.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Eric Zweig, speaking of officials and officialdom when it comes to hockey, what's the tenor of that when it comes to playoffs? How do they pick the officials? How does it work? What kind of pressure's on them?
Well, at this point, this early round, I mean, by the time it gets to the finals, there is a sort of meritocracy and people who are perceived by their peers to, and by the sort of staff at the NHL who monitors the refereeing. They do have, the best guys they can get calling the Stanley Cup Finals. But at this point, I mean, obviously, there's 16 games or 16 matches, teams, and 8 matches rather than the 30 teams and potentially 15 games a night. So I don't know this for an honest to God fact, but I'm sure they will be leaving out the lower, the less experienced, the people they perceive as the I'm sure the NHL will tell you all our standards, our officials are at a similar standard and we all have confidence in all of them. But I would think that they make an effort in the playoffs. And the thing is that there's known bad blood between Columbus and Pittsburgh and Dubinsky and mm-hmm. Crosby. So they'll be watching for that. So it's true, as Aaron said, that they really have to play a tough physical, but within the rules, because people will be watching for it.
Are there any differences in what coaches can call for as far as goals and goal reviews and that kind of thing? I mean, are there any major differences between playoff rules and regulations and, the regular season, Eric Zweig?
Well, in theory, there aren't.
Okay.
and the odd and the sort of sad thing is that, generally speaking, I would say they are more lax in their enforcement of the rules in the playoffs traditionally than they are during the regular season. Replay reviews, I get the and we want to get it right, but replay reviews make me crazy. I was at the Blue Jays game, the home opener, last night, and there were a couple just meaningless calls where they spent 5 minutes reviewing to see what mostly we knew anyway. Hockey, it so takes away from the flow of the game. I get, as I said, that you
which
want to
can
get
be
the
a strategy
right
in and of itself, though, right?
Yeah,
I mean, Aaron
yeah.
Portsline, Tortorella's pretty big on reviews.
He is. The one wrinkle that the NHL has in place, and it's not new for the playoffs, it's there this season. If you challenge a call and it's not overturned, if you're wrong, you lose your timeout.
That's why they, okay.
Right.
I'm always learning in this thing.
Yeah.
But you can
always
fake your way. You don't get an official timeout, but there's, so we sent out a line change and we couldn't, sorry.
Right.
And you drag your feet as the change
well,
back again.
The one thing they look for, though, is after an icing. Like
yeah.
They're on top of this. That's new a few years ago, where if you ice the puck, you cannot change the players on the ice. So what I have seen teams do, and I know Tortorella's done it a few times, is if there's 2 minutes left in a game and a goal happens, and even if you don't think there's any reasonable excuse for that goal to be pulled back, they'll challenge it. I haven't used my timeout. I might as well get a stoppage here anyways.
Yeah.
And what the heck? See if the miracle happens and they flip it over. But, I mean, in the playoffs, nothing changes per the rule book. But Derek's point, typically they do, there's a greater import on letting the players decide the game. So they tend to swallow the whistle a little bit more. Columbus will tell you they've been swallowing the whistle a lot all season. They have the fewest power play attempts. It's not even close of any team in the league. So they feel like there have been times where stuff has gone on with them that's not been called. So maybe in that sense, they're getting ready for the postseason.
Wow. Okay. That's all the time we have. I could go on and on. But Eric Zweig, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Eric Zweig, author and hockey historian, and also Aaron Portsline, sports reporter for the Columbus Dispatcher, taking off in right after this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of shows on the way there, but away we go.
Have a blast.
Hey, thanks, Ann.
Yeah. And hope you'll be listening tonight or watching tonight, the Blue Jackets. You can check out the Columbus Dispatch for places to go to watch it with a large group, Studio 35. I'm kind of shooting for that on Friday night myself, so check it out. Thank you so much for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.